My name is Roger Harms. I'm an obstetrician who practices in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm grieved tonight that this is my last night here at Holden. But actually, there's one good thing about going home. I'll be able to see again. As you people are watching me look at my notes or any other references, trying to see hands up, I'll be putting on these sunglasses. Not because I'm trying to be Joe Cool or anything else like that, but I went on a wonderful fishing trip with Rudy Edmond the other night. And Rudy has a wonderful roll cast right out of the boat, you know, and with his fly rod. And a little loop of fly line caught onto my glasses, and there's a myopic fish in the bottom of Tom Key Lake that is doing much better tonight as a result. So I'm stuck with my prescription sunglasses for being able to read, etc. Tonight, panel discussion forum, it's really a forum, but the three of us are sitting up here making it a panel discussion too, I guess. We started out with thinking about ethical issues at the beginning of life. These are numerous, everything from frozen embryos that are orphaned in Melbourne, Australia, to the baby Jane Doe case, to abortion. And we obviously are not going to get to all of these issues tonight. But we have a case that we'd like to discuss with you. First, I'll just let the other members of the panel I'll let you know who they are.
I'm Granger Westbury, and I'm interested in this field because when I started as a hospital chaplain back in 1944, I had an experience right on early that reminded me that the Catholics were concerned about patients who aborted and would call the priest for a baptism of the placenta, is that it? No. The embryo. And the, but it was also strange to me because as Protestants, we really never took the birth of a baby that seriously if it was not full term, really, and if it hadn't come to full life. And I began to ask questions around and found that Thomas Aquinas, his general feeling about when life takes place in the child is on the first movement of the child that's available, that can be felt. And most Catholics don't seem to know that Thomas Aquinas felt that way. And as we know now, we have the whole approach to the pro-lifers, which is quite different. But I found that as Protestants, we were also pretty much related to the Jewish people who felt that life was not real unless the child was born alive and able to show life. Then, if we had the possibility of death, we would come in as chaplains and baptize the child if it seemed appropriate. But that's about where we stood in those days. Abortion was, we spoke of it only as therapeutic abortion, and since then we've had all these changes. So if you want to recall, and I'll just take another statement, that about in the 1970s, the ALC and the LCA went ahead with a statement about abortion, and the statement generally says that life must be taken very, very seriously, that there is every reason for us to be serious about it, but that when certain circumstances arise, which they were not willing to describe, the mother of the child and the family had to make that decision and could make the decision one way or another. In the ALC, the vote was something like 550 to 410. 550 in favor of that statement, 410 were not in favor of abortion of any kind. but the LCA was about the same, well, with a little larger group in favor of it. So that's where we stand pretty much today, except that now there's a lot of discussion that there was not in the 70s. Dee?
My name is Dee Bechtel. I'm a lawyer, and generally the state of the law still remains that a person is not considered to be a person with rights under the law until that baby is able to sustain life outside the womb. Now, it seems like that definition then is being placed earlier and earlier in life just because of the advances in medical technology and our ability to keep infants alive at earlier and earlier points. But it's my understanding that even the Catholic Church on the issue of abortion didn't used to have the position that a person deserved, or a fetus or an embryo deserved protection until after it was able to sustain life outside the uterus as well. Now, that's not that ancient a position. That was a position until the advances of recent medical technology. I can't give you an exact date, but I do know that the position of the Catholic Church even used to be that abortion was all right until a certain point in the developmental stage. And it's only been in recent years that the Catholic Church and the rest of us seem to have changed our positions on that. So I'll stop with that and let Roger get into the case that we're talking about.
Okay. Well, we bounced around several case histories to present to you as a kickoff for discussion. And we ended up deciding on perhaps the simplest one, but we'll see. This is...
None of them was simple.
At least three out of the group that we were struggling with were cases that were not specifically cases that in my experience, but very close to cases that I can recall in my experience. So this first one that we'll kick off the discussion with is a 16-year-old white female with her last menstrual period of about April 25th. This is updated for current considerations. And she presents in the clinic, essentially it says on the card, for amenorrhea, absence of periods, but she suspects that she's pregnant. An examination reveals easily that there's an obvious intrauterine pregnancy at about 10 weeks size of the uterus. The patient reports regular sexual intercourse without contraception, smokes 1.5 packs per day, drinks 8 to 10 beers per week on Friday or Saturday, quit school 2 years ago and is currently traveling with a carnival. She states that she has no intention of carrying a pregnancy, especially since she is planning a trip to California in September. And now she looks to me for help with her problem. I guess I'll take the lead in kicking off any discussion that you might be willing to add to this, to say that I take a case like this seriously, and I hate to see situations like this arise. And yet they do arise. And unfortunately, with some commonness. As a matter of fact, I would say in the average, fairly busy obstetrical practice, one case a week of this nature is presented to the physician. And so that means a lot of cases nationwide. And so from the point of view of a physician, there's no way that you can practice today without addressing the question of abortion, and there's no way that you can advise your patients without addressing the question of abortion. And I think that from a physician's point of view, that we need the guidance and support of our spiritual family, the body of Christ, in making these kind of decisions. And that's partly why I wanted to bring this up to you, to say that we need help. We need your input on situations like this, and need your support. I guess that's what I want to say at the outset, and would open it up to general feelings from people in the audience or others on the panel in relation to this information you might need further from this 16-year-old before making advice. What other things might you want to know? What advice could you recommend? And what would you personally do in the place of the physician?
I'll begin it off by saying that this situation isn't far removed from my own experience either. When my own daughter was 16 years old and still in high school and unmarried, she came to me one evening and said, not, I want your advice, or I don't know what to do about this situation, but, Mom, I'm pregnant and I want an abortion, and I want you to be there with me. That quickly brings the situation from a very intellectual discussion about is abortion right or wrong, down to the gut level. And I have a hard time imagining any parent who would, in that sort of a situation, say to their daughter, well, the church's position on this is, or have you considered the ethical problems, et cetera, et cetera. Of course she had considered her own personal ethical problems before she even came to me. And I have a hard time imagining any parent who would in that situation do anything other than what I did, but said, of course, I will be there with you. And I was there with her and holding her hand during the abortion. That's not an easy decision for me as a parent, and I am confident that it was not an easy decision for her. But what I need, and I think what my daughter needs and continues to need, is the feeling that the body of Christ is not going to be judging her or me for that act, that we are in the business of forgiving each other just as Christ forgave us, and that it's important that we wrestle with some of these decisions. I also would add that I'm 42 years old. If I were to discover tomorrow morning that I were pregnant, I am unmarried, the chances are great that I, because of my age, that any child I would bear at this age would have a great chance of being handicapped in some way, likely Down syndrome. That's not an easy question to wrestle with either. But given just those facts at all, just those facts, if no other facts, I would want the right to have available for me an abortion if I chose to do that. And I think that's important for me, and I think abortion in general is important for my daughter if she chooses and wrestles with that decision.
Well, you're very kind of us to get us off on that basis and to be so honest about it. Your comment about the number of patients, it's currently close to 1 out of 3 patient people that has an abortion these days, so it's a very common problem. And the change in attitude toward it has, I think, to a great extent, come about because of the Catholic Church, and that we are now very much more aware of life than we ever were before. But it always comes back to the individual problem, which Dee has started with us now. We're anxious to hear what you all have to say.
Someone in the back of the room here.
Well, I guess that if it were my daughter, I would have a personal kind of helplessness about it initially. Just, I would have to be aware of that in terms of my own feelings and perceptions. And I don't know if that would also, in your case, I didn't get your name in the middle.
Roger.
I don't know if there's also a professional kind of helplessness in terms of feelings or perceptions or not. But to first of all recognize that I can't do anything for that person initially until I recognize my own feelings and kind of deal with those.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'd like to say that one of the things that I find, I think that Dee sort of mentioned and left an opening for me here, one of the things that frightens me is I see this being such a common procedure and such a common answer to problems is the reference to likely a baby with Down syndrome at age 42. It is getting to be very common that an answer to so many clinical problems, whether it be the risk of congenital abnormality down to the inconvenience of using abortion as an alternative form of birth control, that abortion has become a very easy answer in our society. A very easy answer. And for instance, the question of Down syndrome. At age 42, we may be dealing with about a 1 in 60 to 1 in 70 chance of having a baby with Down syndrome, which is certainly very much higher than it was at the age of 20. But the odds are pretty fair. 59 out of 60, let's say, that the baby is not going to be abnormal. And yet that's a very common thought, that I am over 35 and I'm therefore pregnant, I ought to have an abortion because the baby may be abnormal, etc. It's an easy answer. It's beginning to come out more and more as an easy answer. Yes.
Excuse me. Abortion is never an easy answer.
Excuse me, but I think for some it is.
I had a baby when I was 40 years old, and I wrestled to a degree with these questions about, is this child going to be okay? Granted, I was married and all of that, that was not part of the issue, but I had a concern.
Sure.
But it certainly was not an easy answer from a woman's point of view. It may be common, but you see a lot of people coming for abortion. It's never easy.
Yes, I would agree. I wanted to say that too. Thank you for saying that. That I don't think, not anyone that I have talked to that has wrestled with that problem has considered it an easy answer. It's a very difficult question for anybody who is confronted with it.
Well, I think you should know that, knowing Roger, that it's a terribly serious thing for him to face, and that he does not enjoy this at all as a part of his work. Is that all right to say?
I think that's fair to say. I think it is perceived as easy by me by the number of repeat patients I see. If it is so difficult, why would one voluntarily get themselves in that situation 3 to 4 times? Kindly express yourself other than a hiss.
I didn't his.
I know.
I don't exactly know what to say, because what you're saying is extremely judgmental. And I really can't make general statements. You may see the same young woman repeatedly in your practice, but I don't know her, I don't know anything about her circumstances, and I would not sit here and pontificate about why she got herself in that situation so many times.
I don't think he has.
The other thing that I'd like to say is that if the situation were me, for example, at age 42, etc., it's very easy, perhaps, for the church to say, well, you need to bear the consequences of your sin to me. But my response to that would be, that may be true, but are we also concerned with the father of that child bearing the consequences of those sin? And I really see a lot of that in the church's position. And I realize that the church's official position is that it is a matter of choice. But if there are people in the church who are saying to me, you got yourself into that mess, lady, you can deal with it, we're not saying the same thing to the man who also created the mess as well. And I think that is something, is a situation that the church needs to look at as well.
Is that the question, or is it a question of a lie?
I can't deny that it is a lie.
You're saying the consequences for the two who made the child, but
that's right. And I can't deny that that is a living bit of life. But what it comes down, and again, it's not an easy solution, it's not an easy question to deal with, but there are other situations that we deal with in terms of destroying life as well. I kill a mosquito without even thinking about it. Am I not also destroying life when I kill a mosquito?
I'd kind of like to see us get to this particular case, because we have another case. If you don't think this is a good teaching case, would you care to tell us what you would suggest doing with this woman?
I apologize for not hearing the first portion of this, but I guess I wanted to relate a couple of things. One was my sort of gut feeling when you were speaking of your own daughter. First of all, I guess the last thing I'd want to do is to sit in judgment of anybody's decision in that situation, and I really feel for you. Even having to advise your daughter, I don't know what I would do in that situation, except to say that I think my beginning point is that it's more than a bit of light, it's a real human being to me. And beginning from that standpoint, I think the church is utterly wrong if it says to you or anybody else that you have lived with your sin, lady. I think that's dead wrong, but I think it is right to advise any person in a situation where pregnancy occurs, that this is more than just a routine surgical procedure or anything else, because there's human weight there. And I wish my wife were here to repeat the rest of this, but she had a baby last year and a half ago when she was almost 42. And the thought obviously did occur to us. In fact, we were advised by many people, why don't you have an amniocentesis and if things don't look right, then have an abortion. And she didn't consider that a possibility. I'm glad for that, because I didn't want that either. We felt that whatever happened would be, in this case, a gift from God. And if there were abnormalities, we could live with that. And again, I'm not suggesting that everybody should take that approach to it, especially in our case, we did happen to have a family situation that was a loving situation, I think, and the result of that birth was a boy who's a year and a half old now, and very fortunately hasn't any physical abnormalities at all. But the doctor did say to us at that point, when Marilyn went in for the first time, that you have really have three options. You can have an abortion now because of the age factor. You know, the odds, as Dr. Hearn said, were about 50 or 60 to 1. And secondly, you can wait and have an amniocentesis at about, I don't know what the time period was, several weeks at any rate, and then if things look bad, then have an abortion then. Or you can carry the term. And Marilyn said, well, for us, this is an option. And his response is interesting. He said, well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because you would have had to get a different doctor in that instance, which we were very grateful for, too. But I feel very strongly about the nature of that human being, right from conception. I also feel very strongly that none of us have the right to sit in judgment on a human being and what they do and what they choose.
Back to the case that you presented, I think if I were the doctor, I would probably do the abortion.
You probably would what?
Would do the abortion, because if this girl is in a situation, she'll probably get it done by someone other than a medical person who will do it right. And we're talking about lives. More than likely, she would lose her life. It's a possibility.
Good possibility if she had an illegal abortion.
Right. And so you're talking about hers or the baby's, or possible baby. And then try to follow it up with somehow not, you know, trying to educate her enough to not have it happen again.
For those who have struggled with the question, what is their experience as far as the post... the post-surgical procedure education in this regard? Do you think, first of all, does anybody think there is a place for a physician after an abortion to advise a patient in regard to avoiding the situation? Is that the role of a physician?
Yeah, I think it ought to be a requirement.
Is that not pontificating?
No.
Because
no,
abortion...
Educated.
Well, wait a minute. From a physiologic point of view, abortion is a safer method of birth control than oral contraceptives, than intrauterine devices, than anything except barrier methods. So on what grounds are you going to advise a patient?
Because you're dealing with a life, I think. You're dealing with a future life.
Okay. Any
it's
other?
A vicious cycle. I think you try to stop it somewhere.
What is provided by typically by a private physician in terms of talking time, either the physician himself or herself, or making readily available another healthcare professional of some sort, not forcing that, but making it very easily and economically feasible for a person to do that?
I don't know that I can answer on a, you know, a nationwide basis to give you an average. I'd have to say that realities are that actually in most cases in medical care that rapid turnover, et cetera, is a high emphasis in an office practice, and I presume that that is carried through to some extent with this problem as well. Those things that are particularly sticky situations that take a lot of time are usually not prearranged, booked into your schedule, that you know this is going to be a problem that's going to take longer and have that allowed for. Not to say that all physicians would ignore that possibility, that have to take that time and foul up their schedule purposely in order to take that time. But in the realization of medical practice in general, there's not really a built-in for the anticipated patient who has particularly a difficult problem.
Do you have anything built into your state law that says that you have to have a counselor to talk with the patient before an abortion is performed? Certain states have that. And all the counselor does is to try to make sure that 1 hour is spent discussing the matter, making sure that they have thought through the various aspects of it. But they do not decide for the patient or try to push them one way or the other.
that's not the law in Minnesota. It is done in some clinics, but not the law. Yes?
Excuse me. I volunteered at Planned Parenthood for about 2 years in California. And in California, what we do when the women come in who are pregnant is that they know at that point, most of them, whether or not they want an abortion. And then what they do is they go in and they are counseled. Now, the counselors are remarkable people. We're not, Planned Parenthood is there to make abortion readily available simply because it is a terrible method of birth control. It's available so that young women, our young sisters, don't go out and find another way to have it done. And before abortion was illegal, many, many women were doing that. Those who had money were able to go to Japan and have it done there. Those who didn't have the money did anything they could to get rid of the child. The counselors care very, very deeply about what's going on with these young women. They were not casual at Planned Parenthood at all. And they are talked to, and they are told of every option that's available to them, every viable position that is available to adapt is made known to them. Is there any way that they can have the child? Do they want to have the child? If they're positive that they don't, if they're sure that they don't, then they go ahead and schedule the abortion. And a lot of times I've walked through Right to Life or groups that are out there. I want that balance. I want to know that there are people out there that are just crying for the right to life, because we need that balance. We've got to have it. This is very valuable. But I've said to those people, come inside and see. Come inside that this is not a cheerful place. Come inside and see that there are mothers who sit with their children, or there are sometimes the boyfriends who sit with the girls who wait with them while they're having the abortion. Come and see that nobody in there takes life casually. But by gosh, I want to know that option is available. It's gotta be. And then what happens is that doctors will sit down with them and say, if they've shown up more than once, the doctor would say, look, you can't continue to do this. You gotta value your life. Two or three abortions are very, very dangerous to your body. Now, doggone it, if you're going to continue to do that, consider sterilization. If you're not, if that's too drastic for you, then you've got to find some method that works for you, because life is very valuable, very valuable. It's the most valuable. So I can't imagine that anyone would assume that abortion is ever a viable option, but it's got to be made available. Otherwise, people will seek some other method.
I have a question. I'm a little bit confused. When you stated the question, I had the situation. I had the impression that you are not free to decline to serve that individual. Simply to say, I'm sorry, but I can't practice in a way that takes the life of an unborn child. You are free as a doctor to say that?
Well, that's one of the options available.
It is an option. Oh, so then the dilemma is hypothetical.
More pushed to another person.
Pardon?
That means, yeah, it's passing the problem on to another person, but it is an option. That is certainly one of your options.
Make sure to at least practice in the way that you feel has integrity for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You are free to do that.
Ready to read another case?
Okay.
Is there more that people want to say on this issue? Is there
some of the same questions will come up with the second case?
Okay. This is a 23-year-old married woman, first pregnancy, who was having a routine obstetric ultrasound at 24 weeks gestation. Generally speaking, 24 is right on the borderline. There have been babies who survive at 24 weeks gestation. strictly from a maturity point of view. The ultrasound exam reveals a grievous abnormality of the brain with fluid accumulation and apparent destruction of all brain tissue above the brain stem. This is the only complication in an otherwise normal pregnancy, and it is obviously a great shock to the patient and her husband. This is the situation that arises with certainly not the frequency that the first case does, but with some frequency. And now we're dealing with the question of the patient has now been told that her baby has a condition incompatible with life, and the choices that are available, and we'll have to go to D here a little bit for the legal question, is that she could await the onset of labor in another 14 weeks or more, 3 to 4 months, and at that time go into labor and deliver a baby that will almost certainly die very soon after birth. Or labor could be induced at this point, thereby relieving the 3 months of waiting and allowing the patient to perhaps go through the grief process in a more immediate fashion and begin on her way to recovery. The question is, I guess, first of all, would be inducing labor at 24 weeks, would that be legal?
My understanding, at least of the Supreme Court decision, Roe v. Wade, that made abortion generally legal within certain parameters in the United States, is that that would be legal under Roe v. Wade, because that would be, assuming you did it very shortly after this 24-week time, that would be within that second trimester, for which there are, if there are medical reasons for doing an abortion within the second trimester, the second 3 months, then that is still legal nationally. Some of that would depend upon what state this person was in and what the state law was. I'm not sure more than that in terms of, I guess it becomes a medical opinion at some point then as to what, whether the child would necessarily die if there's, if there's 100% chance that the child would die at that point, or...
That would be unknown.
You didn't call this an abortion. This would be a spontaneous, what do you call it?
I said
induction of labor.
But
the question is, would the child survive?
Right. Yeah. Which at 24 weeks is tantamount to abortion, because the chances of survival from a lung status are essentially nil, not quite nil, but very close. And in regard to the prognosis for existence versus, I don't know if we want to say life, defining life, but as far as proceeding with respirations after delivery, there's probably a reasonable possibility that this baby would, since its brain stem appears to be intact on ultrasound.
Now, I need some help medically then. When you say the brain stem is...
That is that which controls vegetative states. In other words,
that's
breathing,
that's
cardiac activity, and that would be all. The entire thinking area of the brain appears to be destroyed on ultrasound.
Okay, so you're talking about delivering a child who would most likely be a vegetable for the endurance of its existence, or inducing labor and likely producing a well, doing an abortion.
Right.
Is that correct?
That is the question.
What would you suggest doing if you were the doctor?
What do the parents want?
After explaining the options, the parents would prefer induction of labor.
How did you feel about it personally?
I don't want to cut off the discussion, but...
Let's not cut off the discussion quite yet.
I'll tell you.
There are some others, yes.
It seems fairly similar to a case where you have an adult or person who was formerly able to express himself, give a decision, who perhaps went into coma, vegetative state, whatever. Would, and in that case, I suppose most times the family, parents, whatever, would be the ones making the decision as far as that life. Now, supposing you have a baby who would be in that same sort of state, as I understand it, who might be able to live a bit longer after it was born, it seems that the family would be in a position to call a decision very similar to an adult or any other person in that state. And as I understand it, many times a family or what have you could make the decision to end any restoration or
withdraw life support.
Right.
Which I guess you could extrapolate to withdrawing life support by removing the baby from the uterus.
I'm trying to imagine what it would be like for a woman having that information to walk around for another, what, 2.5 months, having the community around you anticipating and exciting and ready to have showers and to live with that sort of thing. I'm trying to imagine. I think that would be so incredibly painful that I would opt for moving ahead with it and hoping that the hospital personnel could deal with enormous sensitivity.
Is induced abortion the same as therapeutic abortion was in the past? What's the difference between therapeutic abortion and criminal abortion? Why don't you tell us what that is so we know what we're talking about?
Well, okay. I think those terms have sort of, criminal abortion is obviously by a non-licensed person, usually by using methods which would not be acceptable in any hospital setting, generally consisting of opening the cervix to gain access to the contents of the uterus and then pulling that out with whatever instrument was available, frequently coat hangers, etc., which were not sterile and resulted in much infection. That's criminal abortion. Therapeutic abortion, in its strictest sense, means performing an abortion for the sake of the life of the mother, and it's generally understood to be, in the case of a life and death matter, which is exceedingly rare but does occur on occasion. And what we talk about today, this would not exactly fall into either of those categories. And the first case falls into elective abortion, where one could argue that it's therapeutic for the sake of psychological or life situation indications, but generally considered elective because of those things are not objectively measured and thereby known to the physician to be therapeutic. There's a difference, though, in how each is performed. The early abortion that we talked about with the first case is generally done by removing the contents of the uterus with a sterile instrument using a suction apparatus, which has, in the hospital setting, is exceedingly safe for the mother. There is a chance of perforation of the uterus, always a chance of infection, but the rate of both is quite small. And what we'd be talking about in a case like this would be use some kind of agent to actually induce labor, that the power of the uterus pushes the baby out, because at this size, at 24 weeks, ready extraction of the baby through the cervix is possible, but would be troublesome. Okay. Anybody have any other differing opinions?
I have a question. Why was the ultrasound done in the first place? Was the patient having problems?
No, it was routine.
Do they routinely do ultrasounds on all patients in Minnesota?
No. Certain practices do them routinely, however. Mine happens to.
Do you want to say whether it's a problem? Is it problematic to do ultrasound? Do they know, as far as you know, there's no problems at all involved? But that's what was thought concerning a drug about 15, 20 years ago.
Yes.
And 20 years later, we had some problems with it.
Right. Well, as regard to ultrasound as a sidelight, ultrasound as a technique has come under some question about its safety, specifically for the reasons that you mentioned, that it is very difficult to prove that anything in an obstetrical situation is safe. As I mentioned earlier in the session earlier today, that I cannot prove to you that Holden beans would be safe for pregnancy. And the reason I say that facetiously is that in order to statistically prove that something is safe, a huge number of patients would have to be looked at in which all other variables are held completely constant. And in a human situation that is going across 40 weeks of a person's life, it's almost impossible to hold other variables constant. And so it will never be proven safe. There, as far as evidence that it is harmful, there has been none to date. After approximately 15 years of ultrasound use in pregnancies, no evidence in the clinical setting that it causes any abnormalities. There have been some questions in regard to exposure of cell cultures to high-intensity ultrasounds, that changes have occurred in those cell cultures, which would be worrisome if they happened in babies. But they have been not reproducible, except at very high levels of ultrasound, which are not used in the diagnostic setting.
How does ultrasound compare to X-ray?
Very favorably in terms of its risk. X-ray, because of the nature of X-rays in general, is accumulative. And a dose of X-ray that you receive as a fetus will be with you until you're 80 years old. Any chest X-rays, et cetera, that you accrue during life will be additive. And actually, it appears to be the earlier in life, the more damaging the X-ray might be.
But just till the age of 80.
90. Don't worry.
I'm concerned about that.
I had to shoot above 71. We were using 71
in the last year.
Anyway. So, in regard to X-ray, has known risks for babies. There's no question about it. It has known risks for any human being. But as far as ultrasound is concerned, up to this point of our understanding, after 15 years of clinical use, there is no apparent risk to that diagnostic procedure in the diagnostic setting. So, this was discovered on a routine ultrasound on the basis of attempting to date the pregnancy.
Is ultrasound always correct? I mean, does it ever indicate a problem that upon birth is not there?
That is certainly a consideration, and I think that repeating the examination by more than one examiner would be appropriate. There are certain findings such as this that are so blatant that I would have to say with confidence it won't be incorrect, but certainly any diagnostic technique could be an error on one given examination.
Do we have no one here with right to life interests?
Right here. I have a concern. Abortion is something that's always, I've always really grappled with, and I'm a nurse, and philosophically it seems to me that it's so arbitrary because, you know, in one room, down the hall, you can have physicians, nurses, and everybody fighting like heck to save this, you know, infant maybe 24 weeks. And then, you know, around the corner, you know, maybe in the surgery service area, they're doing an abortion on a 23-week-old fetus. So it seems so arbitrary to me. My other point, and even though those people may have different situations, it seems so arbitrary in the way that human beings are dealing with life nowadays. It's like the lemons that are just running over the end of the cliff, you know, because they get overpopulated. You know, maybe it's a sign of decadence in our society or something. And just my last question, my question is, what do the scriptures say? You know, is it ever the Lord's will that you get pregnant or not get pregnant? I mean, everybody, it seems to be like, you know, the woman has that choice and she can rip that baby out of her. But what about women who don't get pregnant? That, you know, is that the Lord's will? Or, you know, women who do get pregnant? Where does God fit in here? I haven't heard God mentioned yet tonight. I would just like some response there.
I think it's pretty hard to decide what God wants in a situation like this. I think the church, in its final statement, which took years to put together, is unable to find scripture that will say this is the way it ought to be. We would like to find something quite that simple, to be able to say there's no doubt about it, this is it. I think our whole concept from the Bible is that life is sacred, and that this is this is something that we've got to take very seriously, and that the church has a responsibility to discuss this as we're discussing it tonight, and not to have somebody at 11 and a half weeks suddenly come in and say, what shall I do? But that at least they will have thought about this from a number of angles. But when you see that all of the people involved in putting this statement together for the Lutheran Church, and for the same thing was done with the Presbyterian Church, which Dee is a member of, and the Methodist Church, they've all come to the place where all we can say is, it's a matter of choice. We cannot tell you exactly. Each situation is different, and for us to say this is the way it is and there's no other answer. The fundamentalist churches are wanting to get definite about things, and that's one of the reasons they're growing so fast, because the average person says, I just want to join a church, don't tell me something. I go to these mainline churches and they say, well, you have this possibility and you have that possibility. I don't want that. I want them to tell me. And it just isn't that simple. And I think that's where we're in this dilemma at the present time. The Bible is not a book that says, a book of rules. I thought it was interesting just a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago now, no, 3 or 4 weeks ago, that the Right to Life movement was meeting in Denver or someplace, and Cardinal Bernardine of Chicago, who probably will be a pope someday, was invited to speak. And he was very hard on them because he said, I am not interested in having a group be a one-issue group. Your only issue is abortion. You are not interested in other aspects of life and death, such as capital punishment, such as peace and war. And he said, the Catholic Church is not going to back you up on this. And they were floored by it. Bernardine is backed up by the church on this statement that these are all very difficult things, and to come out so flat-footed on one issue and say, this is the way the Bible has it, this is it, there is no other solution, is not what the Bible says about life generally. We put ourselves in the spirit of Christ. We try to look at life through the eyes of Christ, and we see him looking at these people in the differing situations. And I too have been active in Planned Parenthood in the past, was on the founding board years ago. The seriousness of this group of people was beautiful to behold. And I hate to hear it maligned at the present time by the right to lifers who will not come in and see the quality of people who are trying their best to deal with an issue that cannot be dealt with in such a cavalier fashion.
I think I agree with most of what you're saying, except that I don't think it's quite correct to say that the church has made a certain statement on this issue, because the largest Christian church has made it, taken a very, very definite stand on the issue of abortion generally. In spite of what you're saying about Bernardine, I think I don't know what he's saying.
He's not opposed. Oh no.
Circumstance, but I think it is still true that a majority of the, at least the largest church, as well as one Lutheran church and other churches as well, have taken essentially what is called a pro-life stance. And I agree with you. I don't like the one-issue politics that goes on so often. In fact, it turns me off totally. Yeah. But I still take personally a very conservative position on this issue, because I think that the way societies break down throughout history is by dehumanizing certain segments of society, including what is now called a fetus, but one time it's called even by Planned Parenthood, a child. And I'm concerned about that. Now, I have a question about this particular instance, though. I don't think I would disagree at all with what seems to be a consensus, at least on the part of the majority of people here. But I have a question. If ultrasound were not available and that child was born in the state in which you described, Roger, what options do the parents have at that point? Are the options different at that stage from the weeks earlier?
Well, I would have to say that the options are somewhat different in that the baby may not need life support, which at the moment it does. So they would have the option to remove any what would be considered extraordinary methods to keep the baby alive, such as life support systems, but they could not take an active step to end the baby's life at that point, which is an option at this point.
Yeah, and from the legal position too, their position would, their options would be very different at 24 weeks gestation or at full term birth.
I think one of the decisions we have to grapple with is just that. What is the difference?
I wonder about the question of adoption, and there's so few children available for adoption, and I have a couple of cousins and their wives who have waited for years for a child and only have one child. They would like to have more. And I wonder what would happen. I'm just wondering if the girl did have the baby and it was taken away from her for adoption. She had chosen that. But I wonder if that would be sort of a something for her next time. It might be, I don't know, it might change her thinking about abortion or being in that circumstance again, so that again she would lose a child. I mean,
are you saying then that you are, you're wondering, considering the possibility then of requiring this, the person in the first instance then to carry the child to full term and then give it up for adoption?
Not requiring, it would be her choice, but I would think that she would think twice about being in that situation again and giving away another child. I think it would be, maybe she'd use
I think a counselor would always encourage that as an option. And that would be one of the first things we'd say, is that this, have you thought of having the child? Because we have so many people that would like to have a child. That would you say that regarding the Planned Parenthood as one of the options?
Yeah, they always bring that up as one of the viable options.
That's right.
And the whole thing is anything rather than the abortion.
An abortion.
Anything.
I see our time is up, yeah. And we need to.
We do have to give up the room for conflict. As just to give you an idea. You wanted to know how I dealt with the problem. In the second problem, in the second case, we did induce labor, essentially the next morning, and I felt at that point that that was the loving thing to do. And in the first case, abortion was made available to that patient also. But my object for bringing these up is just to have our guts ground around a little bit about it, and to say that, just in summary, the question about God, that in my research reading Karl Barth, Helmut Thielicke, Ethics by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, there is not one of them, not one, that would support abortion as is practiced in America. And I think we have to be aware of that, and at least let us wear, let it wear on our minds a bit.
I know we had a couple instances of like this, they involved an ultrasound that this baby was protected. Well, it didn't induce labor, but in a month or two, the baby died.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mother had to wait that long, and that was just as hard.
Well, thank you all for your input and your interest.
Thank you.